Welcome to the Creative South Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Frostholm. Today, we're continuing our conversation with the team from Blind in the Future with their digital director, Ben Burns. Ben and I chat about how he went from studying design and working in the industry to being a narcotics officer on a task force with the DEA, and then eventually back to design. How reaching out to Chris Doe to say thank you when he was struggling with his own freelance business eventually led him to ending up working at Blind in the Future. And much more, all right after this. I talk about Jack Prince on the podcast all the time, and today isn't any different, except that I want to talk about how much we rely on them at Creative South. Not only has Jack Prince been a longtime sponsor of Creative South and the podcast, but they help us with so many cool things every year. Whether they are making our pop-up displays and tablecloths, or printing our notebooks, Jack Prince is always there when we need them. They even printed my Creative South podcast stickers that have a coupon code on the back that gives you a great discount on all of their products. Speaking of stickers, Jack Prince will print any kind, shape, size, stock, including full-color stickers with full-color liner prints for you to use as product labels, promotions, bumper stickers, hang tags, business cards, and more. Right now, you can get 500 3x3-inch die-cut stickers starting at $149 when you visit jackprince.com. Plus, Jack Prince is giving Creative South podcast listeners 15% off all orders over $25 when you use promo code PrinceSouth18 at checkout. Visit jackprince.com for your next order of stickers, prints, or whatever you need today. At Creative South, we love Astute Graphics plugins. Astute Graphics have developed 16 popular and innovative plugins for Adobe Illustrator, leading the way in imaginative tools for vector designers that significantly save time, boost creativity, and achieve amazing results. Popular plugins include VectorScribe, Phantasm, Vector First Aid, Mirror Me, and more, all of which come with a free 14-day trial. Go ahead and give them a try. Astute Graphics currently have 25% off the full Elite Bundle, saving you over $200. Check out www.astutegraphics.com. When you search the web using Ecosia, they use the money generated from search ads to plant trees to help regenerate deforested lands around the world. As a matter of fact, Ecosia uses at least 80% of their profits to plant trees and have planted 20 million trees so far, with a goal of 1 billion trees by 2020. Visit ecosia.co/creativesouth to plant your first tree today. If you like the Creative South podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon. Every dollar helps us cover hosting costs, upgrade equipment, and keep the podcast going. With options starting at just $1 per month, you can help support the podcast and even wind up with some cool Creative South podcast swag. When you become a Creative South patron, you'll get access to exciting Creative South news before anyone else, a shout out on the podcast thanking you for your support, Creative South podcast stickers and t-shirts. So please help support the podcast by becoming a patron over at patreon.com/creativesouth. Ben, thanks for joining me tonight.
Thanks for having me. I'm super psyched, man. I'm very pumped.
Yeah, me too. So let's dive right in. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Michigan.
You grew up in Michigan. Okay.
Yeah, small town called Kalamazoo.
I know where Kalamazoo is.
Yeah. Do you know where Plainwell is?
I don't know where Plainwell is.
Okay, so Plainwell is a little bit south of Kalamazoo.
Okay.
And that's where I still have family. My grandmother owns a restaurant there, so I was there until high school.
Okay.
And then in high school, we moved down south.
Okay. Yeah, I'm a Midwestern kid too, so I know that feeling. I lived in Minnesota till I was 13, and then we moved to Florida for like a year and then bounced around, but stayed in the south. So.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah, so I've been in the south for quite a while. So anyways, back to you.
Yeah. We moved from Michigan down to South Carolina.
Okay.
So I went to high school in Hilton Head.
Oh, and my uncle just moved from Hilton Head to Tucson.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so I bounced around the South for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But that transition was pretty crazy, going from the cold winter of Michigan to the, you're basically swimming outside in the South Carolina humidity.
Sure, yeah. Literally in the humidity.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, I know that feeling well, being in Mobile. It's swampy.
Yep.
and having spent quite a bit of time in Hilton Head, it's just as bad there, if not worse sometimes, especially on island.
Sure. I think we're better than Florida, but that's about it.
Yeah, probably. And it really depends on where you are in Florida, too.
Exactly.
So growing up, what type of kid were you? What were you into?
You know, early on through, actually till the move, I was really into drawing. I sketched a lot. Mm-hmm. I was horrible at it. And I read a lot, too. I was reading Lord of the Rings, a lot of fantasy books, and listening to music and drawing. That was my life.
Okay, so you weren't a jock.
No, not at all. Which surprises a lot of people because I'm 6'1". Right now I'm like 280 pounds. And, you know, everybody asks me like, hey, are you a football player? And even in high school, the coach was like, man, you got to go play football. And just wouldn't have it.
Wasn't your thing. And that's fine.
Yeah.
So going through school, are you taking as many art classes as you can, or, I mean, as, you know, as electives and stuff like that?
Yeah, I honestly didn't really connect the dots between art as something to take seriously until high school.
Okay.
And as soon as I hit high school, I became absolutely obsessed with photography. Mm-hmm. So in the days that in my high school days, there were only 4 photography classes available. It was photo 1 through 4.
Sure.
And I burned through those in 2 years. And so I went to the chorus teacher, mm-hmm. who happened to be the dean of the arts, or in charge of the arts program there at the school. Mm-hmm. And I was like, listen, man, I love photography and I want to take more photo classes. Is there anything you can do for me? Mm-hmm. And Larry Mercer was his name. And Mr. Mercer said, you know, I was at a bar the other night and I heard your band play at the Battle of the Bands. So I'll make you a deal. You can take as many photo classes as you want. We'll make them just for you. But you have to come sing in chorus and show choir.
So he blackmailed you into it.
Yeah. So my senior year was just absolutely ridiculous. I had 2 chorus classes, 2 photo classes, which I was the only kid in that class,
sure.
And then a couple theater classes. So, yes.
Gotcha.
That was a long way of saying, yes, I was obsessed with art classes then.
Yeah, you're hitting the trifecta of arts there. So when you get out of high school, what do? Do you go to college? Do you start doing your own thing?
I went to school, mm-hmm. and initially I wanted to go to Full Sail or, you know, another program where I could learn more about photography. But mm-hmm. somewhere along the way, somebody told me that I wouldn't be able to make any money shooting photos. And I listened. So
that was dumb of you.
I know.
I mean, I could understand if you were like a painting major or something. That's one thing.
Yeah, so I listened and wound up at Clemson.
Good school.
Taking graphic arts, mm-hmm. Which I quickly found out was more about printing techniques, mm-hmm. and the technologies used to print.
Sure.
Which didn't really interest me. So I spent about a semester there and then transferred over to USC. I know, but.
So you go from Tigers to Gamecocks.
Exactly. At USC, I kind of bounced around, a whole bunch of different programs. I spent some time in advertising. I spent some time, kind of dabbling in design classes and, wound up graduating with a media arts degree.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you graduate, what do you end up doing right out of school? Are you freelancing? Do you go work for a company?
Honestly, I started. Okay, so this is kind of a funny story. My sophomore year, I was a vice president or something of the American Marketing Association, mm-hmm. and through those connections, I found a job listing for an internship, mm-hmm. Now, at this point, I had no idea that design as a career even existed.
Sure.
I really didn't. I thought to go into advertising, you had to be an art director, creative director, writer. And so I just didn't even know that graphic design existed, which is crazy to kind of think about that through my transition in the arts. Nobody ever told me, like, hey, you're a good graphic designer. You should chase that down.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people still have that problem, though.
Especially in the South, I'm yeah. recognizing that. Yeah. Where was I? Oh, okay. So I saw this position for an internship mm-hmm. open, and it was for a design intern at a company called Post Nobiles in Columbia. Mm-hmm. I had no idea what I was doing. Like literally, I had no idea how I found myself in the interview, and showed up at this like crazy creative agency in a suit and tie. Mm-hmm. And I sat down and the creative director, who was, her name's Carol Smith, absolute sweetheart, graduated from Ringling. So, you know, she knew what she was doing.
Sure.
She said, hey, okay, show me your portfolio. And the blood just like drained from my face. Right. Cause I didn't have one. I didn't even know what that was.
Sure. I mean, in your defense, you're a sophomore, so
right, yeah. Right. I just was like, I don't know what that is. Somehow, you know, she gave me a second chance. And 24 hours later, I showed back up with an entire portfolio of design work. Mm-hmm. All horrible. But I did not sleep, you know, one wink that night, worked through the night and came up with, I think, 6 or 7 projects to show her. Mm-hmm. She looked at it and she, you know, I could see on her face that, nothing was good in the pages. And but she saw the work ethic there and she was like, okay, let's do this. And so I started at this company working with DreamWorks and Paramount Pictures right out of the gate.
So real small companies.
Yes.
Yeah. Mom and pops.
Yeah. Mom and pop clients. You
sure.
know.
Yeah.
So through sophomore year, junior year, senior year, my skill level just shot up, mm-hmm. you know, working closely with Carol. And I eventually split my time. You know, I was working during the day, taking classes whenever I could at night, and somehow managed to graduate on time. But when I did graduate, I kind of walked on as a senior designer mm-hmm. there at Post Nobiles.
Gotcha. And yeah. So this may take a hard left, but I know from, you know, when I sent you the invite and all, you posted on there, somehow you ended up with a career in law enforcement. How do you go from working at Post Nobiles as a senior designer? How does that transition happen? And how walk me through the path to get to that point.
I watched a lot of 24.
Okay.
And I thought that was really cool.
So Kiefer Sutherland was your role model.
Exactly. Yeah, I did have a Jack Bauer bag in those days. You know, we're talking 2008 here. But no, I felt like, I don't know, I felt like I was just missing something that, mm-hmm. You know, I didn't like having to sit at a desk all day, especially, you know, I was young and stupid. I was like 21. And I just didn't like the fact that I was going to the same office every single day doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted something different. So initially, you know, I spent a year there after college, in that position.
Sure.
And eventually, I just decided to see what else was out there. So I tried freelancing for a little bit, and then I tried to get a job at a different company. Mm-hmm. This was now 2009, and the economy was non-existent. So nobody was hiring designers. So then, you know, I had to start casting a wider net.
Sure.
And embarrassingly, I started at the top. I applied for the CIA. And worked my way down through all the federal agencies, state agencies, and finally the local police departments, and found a home at Savannah Metro. Mm-hmm. So I started there, I think July of 2009.
Gotcha.
As a police officer, yeah.
So what was it about that specifically that spoke to you? I mean, was there a specific incident that happened where that made sense for you as a transition?
Not really. For some reason, it just those it was crazy interesting to me, mm-hmm. and I really don't have any other reason. I just was like, this is different. This is something that, you know, I wasn't even sure that I could do, but I was like, let me try this. Mm-hmm. I can work hard. I was way overweight then, and I was like, I could probably lose the weight and get in there and do some good things and help people. And that was the transition right there.
Gotcha. So how long did you stay doing that?
So I was there for just about 5 years.
Okay.
4 years, somewhere around there. I spent about 6 months on the street, mm-hmm. As a uniformed police officer after training. And then I did something even stupider, crazier. and I joined the National Guard.
Okay.
As a military police officer.
Okay.
So first 6 months I was on the street. Next 6 months I was in training, one station unit training for both the, you know, basic and advanced individual training, mm-hmm. for the Army.
Okay.
So after those 6 months, I came back to the street and I was just absolutely hard charging. I was, really ready to go. And I think my superiors kind of saw that, and, I got promoted to a crime suppression unit. So crime suppression unit, you know, we handled a lot of like the very intensive police work, mm-hmm. high drug gun areas, in Savannah. And,
so the bad parts of town.
Yes. Yes. I did that for about 6 months again, and, made some pretty strategic arrests there and caught the eye of a multi-jurisdictional narcotics unit.
Mm-hmm.
So from there, I was picked up. I was trained as a narcotics agent, and I spent about 3 years working narcotics with DEA and other local agencies.
Gotcha. And it helps that you're in Savannah, because then you can just pop right down to oh my god, I just blanked on the town. So it'd be the feds have a training center there.
Oh, we call it FLETC.
Yeah, FLETC.
No, maybe not FLETC. Yeah, FLETC.
Yeah, that's FLETC.
Yeah. Pop down to FLETC, hang out with those guys.
Yeah.
No, that never happened, but.
Gotcha. Well, I mean, they train DEA stuff and all down there too, so.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I, you know, that's, that was the era that the beard started growing.
Uh-huh.
It was great because, you know, I didn't have to wear a uniform. You know, part of my, undercover persona in a lot of different ways was as a designer,
sure.
Because of SCAD there. So it was a really interesting kind of mix that I was pretending to be a designer as a police officer. And
so that theater training came in handy there to pretend to be that method acting of remembering,
yep, exactly.
That you're a designer, pretending to be, or who's a cop, but pretending to be, yep. a designer.
Exactly. Exactly. Yep. So yeah, we did some crazy things there. We tripped all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
We made some pretty incredible arrests, seized a lot of drugs and guns, hopefully made some difference in some people's lives there. Eventually, I got promoted into the major case unit. So I was working pretty closely with a couple of DEA agents, mm-hmm. on some really cool stuff that I still can't talk about.
Damn it. You can't tease me like that, dude.
Yeah, that's it. Lips are sealed.
All right. So you're spending your time in narcotics. What? How do you walk me through the path of how you get back into design?
The creative. Yeah, sure.
I mean, does this have anything to do with part of your undercover stuff? Is working along, you know, pretending to be a designer, and it just reignited that passion in you and you remembered what it was like.
You know, something they don't tell you is that police officers and teachers make no money.
I mean, I think that's common knowledge. Isn't
it? It is. And you know, after spending a couple years and putting a lot out on the line, I just realized that, man, I am not providing for my family in the way I should be.
Sure.
And so my solution at that point was just to start picking up some freelance gigs.
Mm-hmm.
And so 2012, I went on Odesk and Freelancer.com and a lot of the other horrible design sourcing sites.
Sure.
And I was churning out $50 logos and banner designs and a bunch of other really stupid stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually what happened was the clients that I got, I would say the budget levels and the professionalism of the people that I was being referred to really started to increase.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was my side hustle was making more money than my day job.
Sure.
And so I was faced with a decision, you know, do I want to keep splitting time and pulling these 20-hour days, or do I want to make the leap and go full-time freelance and kind of see what happens? And that's what I did.
Mm-hmm. So when you made the leap going back to full-time freelance, you know, one of the things you ran into when you were first out of college was that sitting behind the desk, getting bored with what you're doing every day, all that. How did you combat that when you got into doing it for yourself?
That's a great question. I've never thought about that before. I think, number one, I grew up, right?
Sure.
That was one thing that happened. I was married, we were homeowners, so, you know, I was working from home, so it was a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
But also there's a level of maturity there, you know, when you're 21, you know, you just see stars. So, I think also being an entrepreneur, mm-hmm. in addition to, a designer, throws me all the curveballs that I needed to kind of keep entertained.
Gotcha. So, 'cause I know, like, something that I struggled with was kind of a similar thing of being in a job that I felt like I was just doing it by rote. Day in, day out, it was the same thing. While I may have a different project, it was exactly the same thing. And I recently started moonlighting again. And that's kind of helped alleviate that boredom that I was getting with my day job. I like the company that I work for, and you know, they got good pay, good benefits. Certainly, yeah. I'm earning more there than I am on my own, but I needed something else to keep me from being bored. So those, you were experiencing that by running your own thing.
Right. Yeah. And I'm kind of a person that really just, I thrive on challenge.
Sure.
When it all hits the fan, that's really when I shine.
Okay.
You know, I'm the guy that is going to put his head down and just charge through. So being an entrepreneur is just a natural fit.
Mm-hmm.
But it does come with struggles, right? Finding clients and figuring out what the hell estimated taxes are and all of the BS that
I've
comes
been trying
with,
to figure that out know, for like 20 years. I still don't understand it. That's why I have an accountant.
Exactly. Yeah. So it comes with its own challenges. It's, you know, it wasn't all sunshine and rainbows, but, you know, I felt like I was once again chasing something that was worth it.
Sure. Well, and I'm going to assume with the growing up, you understood the responsibility that comes with it versus, you didn't feel boxed in by the responsibility. Whereas probably right. when you were younger, there may have been a little sense of that.
Right, right. And, you know, there is something to be said about when you're freelancing or working out of your own house, there is a level of freedom. And mm-hmm. so it's not somebody else telling you that you have to be sitting in a chair for 8 hours a day. You can sit in that chair for 2. You could sit in a chair for 18. It all depends on how much money you want to make.
Sure.
And so there's a huge difference in my perception on the work in that it was self-motivated, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
What do you think that, you know, being in law enforcement, doing the military thing, all of that led to your self-motivation?
Yeah. And perseverance too. You know, I was a softie before all that.
Mm-hmm.
And going through that, you know, I still know dudes that are harder than I am, but going through basic training, going through AIT, going through training for the police department, and, you know, having to literally fight on the street sometimes, it put a little bit of grit in me, more like a hard candy coating on the soft middle, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I'm sure it makes the rejection and, you know, people not necessarily behaving the most professionally when they're offering feedback a little bit easier after, you know, somebody's, you know, threatened to kill you for something that, you know, they basically did to themselves.
Right. Right.
So you're out on your own, you're building a business, you're getting a better pedigree of client. How do you connect with Blind and the future?
This is a good story. I was, this was 2013. I had been freelancing for about a year.
Sure.
And, once again, I found myself, I was working 18-hour days. Mm-hmm. My Google search was not how to get paid more. It was how to find more clients.
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought that I had hit the ceiling with people wanting $50 logos and $400 websites. So I was really struggling, and I just was trying to find any resource to help alleviate this pain.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't afford to hire anybody. I didn't know that was even an option. And I went to the internet for help, because, you know, I lost connections with everybody in design school. You know, Postnobiles, they were going through tough times during this point, and I just didn't have the network to kind of tap into. So I stumbled on Chris and Jose on their channel, The School.
Mm-hmm.
And this is right during the first few episodes where Chris joined Jose's channel.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget what episode I watched, but it just floored me. I remember I was like, oh my God, I just had this revelation, and I was just, I need to reach out to this dude. So I opened up Facebook, opened up Messenger, and sent Chris a message. And I said, listen, Chris, I just want to thank you. Thank you so much for sharing this content with me. Because at that point, they were sharing all of this creative business content, right? They're focused on handling clients and mm-hmm. building and scaling a creative business. And it was just, it spoke right to the pain that I was experiencing. So I just sent him a thank you note, basically. It was a really long, really pathetic thank you note. And I did not ask for anything. And I didn't even expect him to reply. But the next day he did. And he said, oh man, thanks. I really appreciate it. Do you want to chat? And I was like, hey, hold on. So what did you want to talk to me? And he said, yeah, let's chat. You can call me on Facebook, and I want to see what you're going through. So, you know, once again, all the blood drained from my face. I probably looked like a
bearded ghost.
Yeah. And, so I was like, okay. So we jump on the phone, and, we spent about an hour talking.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know what? I want to give you some advice. But I need you to take it. And I said, absolutely. I'll do whatever you tell me to. You know, you've been running Blind for 30 years or for 20 years. And I just dated him. Chris, I'm sorry. he'd been running Blind for about 20 years. And, you know, this is an Emmy award winning designer that I'm talking to on the phone. And, you know, of course I'm going to do anything he says.
Sure.
But he pauses and he says, you need to fire all of your clients. And once again, I was like, you know, had to clear my ears. I was like, what? And he was like, right now, based on what you've told me, you're working for 53 different clients, running multiple projects each, and you're not making enough money to be profitable. So you said, you need to fire every single one of them. And he proceeded to tell me how to do it. I was supposed to offer a retainer at a certain rate, mm-hmm. which was far beyond anything that I was charging. I think it was like $1,000 a month.
Sure.
And
it's a reasonable retainer rate.
Right, right. I think it was for 10 hours, so it was $100 an hour.
That's not bad.
And yeah, so he said, that's what you need to do. So I picked up the phone 53 times and called every single one of my clients and said, listen, I can't make this work anymore. I have to run a profitable business. Give them the spiel about the retainer contract. And I was rejected 50 times.
50 out of 53.
But the three that stayed
sure.
made me more money the next month than the total of the 53 that I had been working with. And at that point, I was sold hook, line, and sinker. So Chris and I maintained a mentor-mentee relationship ever since mm-hmm. and helped me scale. I moved from Savannah to Richmond, Virginia mm-hmm. and opened my doors there. I opened Burnt Creative, and we grew to have a total of five people mm-hmm. working with us. And I think it was early January or February of 2016, Chris and I started having the conversation of like, hey, man, I think I need you out here. I think I want to help. I need you to help me with the digital stuff that we're doing. Mm-hmm. And so we had a couple of really difficult conversations, and within 6 months, I shut my doors, packed up the family with a new baby, and moved out here to L.A.
Gotcha. So what did your wife think during all of this when you told her what Chris told you to do? What was her response?
My wife is the most supportive person that I have in my life. She has this
good, but she should be. Isn't that how it's supposed to work?
yes. But she continually surprises me at the risk that she's willing to take for me to pursue what I feel like is you know what I need to do.
Sure.
And so as soon as I told her what Chris said, she was like, she took a deep breath, you know, and she was like, okay, do it, try it, let's see how it goes. And that's it. I mean, moving out to L.A. might have been we had a little bit more discussing about that happen.
Sure.
But yeah.
Gotcha. So for people who don't know, explain what your role is currently with Blind in the future.
Okay, cool. So I am the digital director of Blind, which means anything UX, web-related, anything that any product that we make for our clients, I am the creative director over those. So, you know, we do a lot of branding, a lot of direct-to-client stuff, mm-hmm. and anything digital runs through my team. I also am the digital director of the future, and the way that we divide roles over at the future side, and for everybody that doesn't know, Blind is an agency.
Mm-hmm.
The future is a design entrepreneurship or creative entrepreneurship education platform.
Mm-hmm.
So they're two separate businesses. With the future, you know, my title is also digital director, but the way that we divide responsibilities is Chris handles all of the content that we put out. We have a YouTube channel with over 220,000 subscribers, you know, a massive Facebook and Instagram following. He handles all of the content that we create on that side. My job is to make sure that we make money. So anything paid, our courses, kits, tool sets, gear, merch,
mm-hmm.
The website, consulting, all of that is set up and run by the team that I have.
Gotcha. So I'm curious because, like, I watch the videos, I do all that. I haven't done any of the paid stuff yet.
Hanging up.
Well, I would like to. It's a financial issue at this point. I mean, about the only thing I can afford is at the moment is the proposal template, the $59 proposal template thing, which
gotcha.
Next freelance check that comes in, I think my wife's a designer as well, and I think we're getting that. But it's very intriguing because normally I look at these things and I look at these sites and I get this, like, you don't know any more than I know feeling from a lot of the people. Mm-hmm. Whereas when y'all are producing, again, I haven't bought any of this stuff, so I don't know this for sure, but your free content seems to be in that Seth Godin model of everything is just as important in the free content as it is in the paid content.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And honestly, we test a lot of the things that we put out for pay with our free content. You know, if Chris and I had our way, if our dreams came true, we would have an army of what we call our supporting members or our sustaining members, which is like a $5 a month donation that would just completely fund everything that we could ever want to teach. We would rather have more of a, I don't want to say freemium, more like the NPR model where we are just completely funded by donations and sponsors and just give away the information that we need to. We're all about democratizing the design education.
And that's one of those things that I really like about y'all is that's what it feels like. It doesn't feel like you've got other ones out there, and you know, I talked to Chris, I think it was last week, and he dropped a name. I'm not going to drop that name because there's plenty more. There's plenty more out there that are like him, but they've got this. Look at all the money I've made.
Let me show you how to do it.
And that just that always comes off as so disingenuous to me. That you know. I understand if you're using that as a reference to, look, this is what I do, you know, it's worked for me. I'm not going to guarantee that it works for you, but this is the model that works for me. You can take it or leave it. In that sense, you've got to give examples to bolster credibility. But when it comes off as self-serving and self-aggrandizing, that seems so insincere. And you guys don't have that persona.
No. And you know, I mean, we're testing the waters with a lot of like advertising platforms right now. And one of the things that we're kind of trying out is, does that voice actually convert people?
Sure.
So we're producing advertisements in the we call the Ty Lopez thread.
Yep, that was the name.
Where it's like, you know, hey, I'm Ben Burns. I just started, you know, my career started with $50 logos, and now I just submitted a $500,000 proposal. You might want our proposal kit. We're testing that out, but it just feels so wrong. But you know, you got to test everything when it comes to ads.
Sure. Well, I mean, I understand that works. It's obviously drawing them in clients and drawing them in business, but I don't know. It for me, that is not what attracts me to wanting to watch something. That's
sure.
I would much rather, and I feel like I'm blowing smoke up your ass when I keep saying this, but I would much rather watch y'all's model where when you talk about clients, it's as a case study and as an example, not as a, hey, I got this client.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's evident. You know, I put out a piece of content a couple weeks ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, about presenting a brand identity job. That was the first major sponsored post that we had. Mm-hmm. And it was a video, I think it's 15 minutes long. And it was all about the way that we present brand identity jobs from soup to nuts. And I broke down the presentation deck slide by slide.
Mm-hmm. I watched that one.
Now so that level of education, you know, typically doesn't exist for free on the internet. But because we had a great sponsor, VideoBlocks, with that, see how I just dropped that?
Nice
plug. So because we had a really good sponsor, we were able to just produce that and take a lot of time to produce and craft that episode. And so far it's just been exploding on the channel. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the sponsor method, the donation method is, you know, we love it. because it's all about lifting people up,
sure.
right? And, you know, when you have guys in, oh man, we talk with some people in the Middle East, some people in India, some people in South America, and in order to buy our $60 proposal kit, that's like, it's literally a week's worth of wages for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they email us all the time and they're like, hey, look, you know, this is too expensive for us. And, you know, we're doing everything we can to just democratize this information, because even in the US, you have guys like, I mean, I graduated with $50,000 of student loan. And
I got about that much. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, people are graduating from, Art Center, SCAD. I mean, SCAD's what, $20,000 a semester?
Yeah, it's
something
ridiculous.
Like that. And it's just, it's crazy. So, like, you know, we're really just trying to.
I mean, I've got a buddy who graduated from RISD who's got, I don't know, it's like $250,000 worth of student loan debt.
Yeah.
How are you, as a graphic designer, how are you ever going to pay that back? It's pretty tough.
I
mean, doctors can't.
I don't know. I know. It's insane. It's insane. But the worst thing about it is that there's no alternatives.
Right.
You know, there's really, until now, but you go to your high school guidance counselor and they don't know what to tell you. You know, they're just going to tell you to go to college.
Yeah.
I have a 2-year-old now, Willow, and I've told my wife repeatedly and, you know, we're pretty solid on this, that I'm just going to tell her either not to go to school or, you know, really just seriously consider what she wants to do with her life mm-hmm. before she decides to go to school.
And get scholarships.
Scholarships.
Lots of scholarships.
Because I think, you know, a lot of people use it to try and figure out, you know, what they want to do, and then they just wind up in debt.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's kind of what happened to me. It's not that I was trying to figure out what I had to do. Mine is from starting off college, not knowing what I wanted to do, college asking me to take a break for a while, and then
wow,
I was not a good student my freshman year.
All right, so Jason's that guy. Got it.
Yeah, I'd never had to self discipline myself.
Exactly.
And it just, you know, I had the option to not go to class, so.
Yeah,
I can sleep in. The consequences of if you don't go to class, you don't learn what's going to be on the test, you don't pass class, dawned on me.
Didn't click.
No,
it didn't. I get
click. It. And it, you know, in hindsight, I wish that I had that discipline.
Sure.
But there's also the fact that I needed to grow up and I needed to learn. So when I did get back in school a few years later, you know, I didn't have my parents paying for college anymore. I was having to pay for it out of pocket. And, you know, I was having to support myself, and I was having to pay for rent and all of those things that, you know, a lot of kids, at least 20 some years ago, I'm not going to date myself completely.
He says 20 something. He means 29.
Not that far.
Yeah.
Closer, but yeah. Back in 1993, there. I'll just date myself completely. Back in 93, yeah.
No.
I know, it's old. But back then, it wasn't as expensive, and it was mm-hmm. still expensive. But by the time I got back in school, every year tuition went up. Rent went up, all those things went up. So I ended up taking out $50,000 worth of student loans that I'm going to be paying back until my kids return.
Yep.
You know? So there needs to be better models.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that not a lot of people, I think that people don't put enough weight or stock into apprenticeships and internships. I mentor a young guy out of Salt Lake City, and he was a high school student, and he was like, what do I do? Should I go to college? And I said, well, do you have the money to go to college? And he was like, well, no, I can get assistance or whatever. I was like, no, do you have the money or do your parents have the money? How are you going to pay for that?
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, I guess I don't. And I was like, all right, let's just try something. And, you know, if your parents are mad at me, that's fine. I don't know. I said, try going to get an internship straight out of high school. And so he did. And I think he's like 3 months into this internship working directly under a fantastic creative director. And he, by the time he's 20 years old, he's going to have more real world experience than all of his peers combined. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that like when we look at the value, when I look at the value of my education versus that first internship, it is severely weighted. I learned more in working under Carol Smith and working in a real world environment than I ever learned in school.
Sure. I completely agree with that because my first job out of college, it wasn't anything sexy. It was just a production, essentially a production designer for a printing company. But I learned more in that job than I did in school.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I learned more design principles in school, but I learned more about how the real world and design principles don't always meet up. You know, and how you've got to find that balance between what you think is the best work for the client versus what the client wants and client needs. God, I can't speak to you. And, you know, you always do your best, but in the end, the client is paying the bills. And this is especially true when you're first coming out of school.
Sure.
You know, there's got to be compromise.
And yeah.
You know, it can't all.
And you only learn that burn, that pain. Through actually having clients.
Yeah.
Because no amount of like school projects is going to teach you that.
Nope.
You know.
No, because you're your own client, so of course you're going to approve everything you do.
Yep.
Which is also why most people suck as a designer when they first come out of school, and that's okay. I mean, I did. I don't know about you, but I'm sure you probably did too.
Yeah. By the time
I mean, you had the internship, but you know what I mean by that.
Yeah. No, I moonlit and just kind of walked into a bunch of design classes.
Mm-hmm.
By the time I realized that design was a career, it was too late for me to switch.
Sure.
Because I thought about switching into the graphic design program, but it was a fine arts program and I would be there for an extra 2 years. And I was like, bump that. No way.
Yeah.
So I did walk into a few design classes and I was just like, you know what? I can get all this from work. You know, I worked with a couple other designers and you know, I had Carol who was an amazing creative director and designer. And, you know, that's where I pulled all of my design knowledge.
Mm-hmm. So I want to backtrack a lot and talk about something you touched on a while back. You mentioned, especially in the South, the difference between a design agency and an advertising agency and how you see that.
Okay. Okay, cool. So it's pretty simple. Ad agencies make advertisements. So it involves a lot of writing, a lot of, commercial work. So video. And sometimes they do print and digital ads and stuff like that. Versus a design studio who's mainly, we're mainly focused on the design and the aesthetic of things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a totally different business.
Sure. So let's expand on that a little bit, because in a design studio, you have the opportunity to do advertising and I'm sure at Blind, you guys have done ads for people and you've helped produce things and things like that. When you get to an ad agency, what do you see as the primary difference in that side of things?
Okay. There's a lot of, I think the line's really blurry, right? And it's very blurry for a lot of people, but the way it should be is that the ad agency is responsible for developing strategy and, they're concerned with more of the business side versus the design studio is all about aesthetics and designing something that's maybe it's usability. But I think it's very blurry, especially on the East Coast.
Yeah.
But when you start playing at a certain level, you see that the big guys, the ad agencies, like, you know, I don't want to name names, but, you know, if you work for a really massive ad agency and you're a designer, you're probably not going to be doing much designing.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably going to be in an art director role, and they hire companies like the way that Blind used to be and other creative studios to do the work for them.
Sure.
So the true definition of an agency is just a connector.
Mm-hmm.
It's where Coke can show up on, you know, somebody's door and say, I need to promote my product. And then the agency finds all the resources to pull together and to do this.
Okay.
So that's like the, you know, biblical definition.
Sure.
And, you know, Blind for most of its existence was a production studio.
Mm.
So we did a lot of commercial work for other agencies.
Mm. So for someone who's wanting to start their own design business versus an agency, how should they go about educating clients on what that is and building things up? Because, you know, I think there's two models you can take. You can take the branding agency where you're working directly with a business, to develop their brand, their logo, their whatever their needs are. But there's also the where you're seeking out, getting work from agencies. How do you expand on that, and how do you find that balance?
Well, I don't think you do find a balance.
Sure.
I think you pick one thing and you go all in.
Okay.
Chris and Jose talk about it in a couple of our videos about having a T-skill,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's for both people, where you're really, really very experienced in one specific thing, and then you might dabble in a whole bunch of other things. But I think finding that T-skill or finding your agency's or studio's specialty is super, super important.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to design new logos, you're starting to narrow in on a specialty, but I would encourage, you know, people starting out to find an industry that they want to work inside of
mm-hmm.
and further specialize into that industry.
Yeah.
So I don't think that there is a balance. And if you're looking to work with bigger agencies, I mean, that is a fantastic business model. I will say that due to the, I want to say globalization of, design talent, the budgets are starting to get smaller and smaller and smaller as people realize that they can, you know, go overseas. So that's something to consider, but there's still fantastic opportunities, especially for a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 person team to work with larger agencies.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that can be your specialty. You can be the production shop for another agency.
Gotcha. And when you're one of those small 1, 2, 3 person teams and you take the advice of fire all your clients, what are you looking for from them? What should be the green lights and what should be the red flags to tell you when to do that?
If you're doing all the work yourself, that should be a red flag.
Sure.
Because if you're looking to, if it's a side hustle, you know, do you, man. It's all about whatever you can pull in and do profitably. But if you're looking to start a business and scale it,
mm-hmm.
if you're having to do all the work because you can't afford to hire somebody to do it for you, that's a red flag.
Sure.
So Blair Enns talked, I'm going to recommend a book to everybody that's listening, even if you're not a designer. The Win Without Pitching Manifesto. So it was written by Blair Enns. He's an amazing author. The book is really short. I mean, it's super small, but it's just potent. And Blair has a concept called minimum level of engagement. And it's a very simple formula. You just take your target revenue for the year
mm-hmm.
and divide it by 10.
Okay.
Because at maximum, you should be onboarding 10 clients a year.
Okay.
So if you're looking to make $100,000 a year, every single client needs to bring $10,000 to the table.
Okay.
And you flesh that budget out really early. And if somebody's not willing to talk about early, if somebody's not willing to talk about money early, mm-hmm. that should also be a red flag, because this is a business.
And so for me, I've noticed that that's a real problem, especially down here in the South, when you're talking to clients of getting them to talk money. When you ask them, you know, do you have a budget? And I mean, I think this is clients all over the place. I don't think it's just down here in the South, but that's been...
Well, no, the South, people are very polite, right? And it's just, it's a faux pas to talk about how much money you have.
Sure.
But if you're a business person, you should be okay with talking about money. And as a designer, as a CEO of a design studio, you should be even more comfortable talking about money.
Mm-hmm.
One of the pieces of advice that Chris gave me really early on, he said, find your minimum engagement level. What is it? And I said, $10K, I guess. And he said, okay, all right, say that. And I was like, okay, my minimum level of engagement is $10,000. And he was like, I don't believe you. We went back and forth like that probably 50 times before he was like, okay, now I want you to go out and every single person that you know, I want you to call them on the phone and tell them that your minimum level of engagement is $10,000 until you're so comfortable saying it that you don't trip over those words, because you have to be confident.
I just got the mental image of you picking up the phone to call your grandma. Grandma, my minimum level of engagement is $10,000.
I called my mom. I did. I called my mom. She's like, what are you talking about?
What?
And I was like, gotta go, mom. I got 100 people to call.
Well, your father's out playing golf right now, but I'll tell him that.
But there's a whole bunch of different ways to flesh out a budget. You know, a lot of people think that if they throw out the number first, they're going to be disadvantaged in a negotiation.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, your job is just to get around that. And so there's different tactics that you can use. My favorite is the bracketing. You say, listen, you know, I'd be happy to do your logo for your Chihuahua's pet company, whatever. Typically, logos, you know, this size, scope, whatever, you know, whatever parameters you want to put around the scope of the job.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, something like this costs between $5,000 and $10,000. Are you comfortable in that range, or did I knock you off your chair? And just there, you'll be able to tell. If they're severely uncomfortable, then you know that, you know, hey, they don't have enough money for you. And if they're like, oh, okay, yeah, no, that's totally reasonable. Bam, you got them. You know the budget.
What's your take on the approach of, and I'm guilty of doing this, so I really am curious. Like, I have a friend who just started a CrossFit business. I know she has no money. And I know what I normally would charge for a logo, which is around $2,500. That's my starting level. But for her, I gave her a huge discount because I know she's starting out and I know she doesn't have the money and she's a friend and I care about her. But I also know that she's not going to take advantage of that situation. What is your take on people offering lower rates to friends? I know a lot of people don't do it, but I'm curious about that.
I have an opinion on this that's different from Chris's.
Okay.
Chris is like, you know, do what you need to do. My take is I will not discount at all, ever, for anybody.
Gotcha.
But I will do something for free.
So it's free or full price?
It's free or full price, because discounted is this weird no man's land where you're not really sure. Like, you know, if something bigger comes in, what do you prioritize?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because like, I got to get this other thing done, but now I'm working with, you know, my buddy. And it's like this it puts you in a really weird spot. When I say, hey, I'm going to do something for you for free, no worries. There is no responsibility on my part. You know, I feel like the expectations are a lot lower.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're truly my buddy, I can call them up and like, hey man, big project just came through. I'm not going to be able to get to this till later.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. And then there's also other means of compensation too.
Sure.
So there's equity plays and all that kind of stuff that you can talk about with the client, who may not have the cash right now.
Sure.
But if it's something you believe in, that's definitely an option.
Gotcha. Very cool. I'm trying to figure out the next way to take this, because we're getting close to our time. So I think that's a good ending note.
Sure.
I'm curious of what do you have going on that may be coming up that you're excited that you're allowed to talk about?
Well, I think, you know, this year is going to be something special for the future. We run both companies out of the same building, mm-hmm. and we also run two separate teams. And we are seeing some insane traction with the future. So, you know, if your listeners don't follow us already, I would suggest you tune in because we're doing some really big stuff. I would say immediate, we do have Aaron Draplin scheduled to be on the show on the 15th.
Tell him I say hello.
So, yes, I will. Absolutely.
And hopefully he remembers me.
We also have some other cool stuff. We're going to be speaking at Winter Work Week, which is an Epicurrents event here in Yosemite. Mm-hmm. And
Dan, I say hello as well.
I will. So, yeah, just a bunch of exciting stuff. I would recommend everybody head to the channel, subscribe.
Awesome. Very cool. Well, Ben, where can people find you online?
People can find me everywhere at Mr. Ben Burns.
Mr. Ben Burns. Easy enough
for me. Mr. Ben Burns. That's right.
All right, Ben, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me this evening.
Delightful. It was delightful.
I had a lot of fun.
Me too. Thanks for the invitation.
You're welcome. Go ahead and have some notes.
Yeah, right.
You can find out more about Ben on Twitter at @MrBenBurns_. And be sure to check out the links in the show notes for more ways to keep up with him. You can keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Facebook at CreativeSOPod, and follow Creative South on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CreativeSouthGA, or over at CreativeSouth.com. And I'm at Jay Frostholm on Dribbble, Twitter, and Instagram. Jack Prince is giving Creative South podcast listeners 15% off all orders over $25 when you use promo code PrinceSouth18 at checkout. Visit jackprince.com for your next order of stickers, prints, or whatever you need today. Astute Graphics currently have 25% off the full Elite Bundle, saving you over $200. Check out www.astutegraphics.com. For a limited time, new Skillshare customers can get their first 3 months for just 99 cents to get unlimited access to thousands of classes when you sign up at Skillshare.com using promo code CreativeSouth. What are you waiting for? Start learning today. And remember, if you like the show, help support us over at Patreon.com/CreativeSouth. And if you like the Creative South podcast, head over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. Rate us and leave a review. This helps more people find the podcast and allows us to keep getting awesome guests. Now go out and hug some necks.